The opinions expressed on the following audio program are solely those of the host and the guests. Byrna Podcast is an independently produced, not-for-profit show and is not associated with the Burning Man organization or its subsidiaries. The views expressed are not representative of the entire Burning Man community and are presented here for entertainment purposes only. In short, calm the fuck down. It's just a podcast.
And this is episode number 61, and it is 69 days till the man burns as of this recording. 69, hey, you know what? That number, by the way, I've had a couple of people like randomly shout out at me at like parties and stuff. Hey, Burner Podcast, how many days till the man burns? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. I Googled that shit before I record the intro. Anyway, come to think of it, the man burns in, quote, might be like the third most Googled phrase in my search history, right after my own name, of course, and will this get infected? So there's a lot happening in our world right now. And by our, I mean like my crew, my circles. Not there's a lot happening in the world. Yes, that's true. But I can't talk about all of the world at the same time. As you may remember from the Enter the Journey episode, I am serving as the sound lead for the Journey project, and it's pretty much like the biggest thing that's coming out of this region. This job has been like a really fun excuse to meet up with producers and sound engineers. Like the other day, I got to tour this recording studio that a lot of big, huge names have recorded in, and the staff was all like psyched about pitching in for the Journey. So it's really exciting to be able to connect with people outside of the community and be like, hey, this is a thing I'm working on, and to get them excited about it. And then it be an excuse for you to connect with people that you normally might not have an excuse to connect with and get to see cool shit. So I don't know if, I'm sure if you're listening to this show, you're involved in shit, but if you're not and you haven't heard us tell you enough, you should totally get involved in our project. It's always a lot of fun. Then obviously a lot of us are starting our own burn prep since it's only a couple of months away. And by starting our burn prep, what I mean is that we're thinking about what we should be doing and then scrambling to do it a week before we leave. In addition to that, I've started this new community-driven venture, which is currently in development phase, so I can't really talk about it much. So that's on my plate. And the rest of the Burner Podcast team is hard at work preparing for our first ever physical event. And I mean physical, like happening in the real world and not online. And it's not like physical fitness, though I guess it could be fitness depending on how hard you dance. The Burner Podcast staff has teamed with Soulwork to bring you, drumroll, Alkaline Live. Yeah, you know that other show that we do, Burner Podcast Presents Alkaline. It's DJ mixes from all these amazing DJs that are active in our community. And yeah. Burner Podcast, the show known to bring you nerdy conversations about Burning Man logistics and deeply personal emotional journeys, is doing a live event, finally, for the first time, and it's a party with techno music. I bet you thought this team would avoid the cliche. Well, how wrong you were. I kid, of course. I'm pretty damn excited about this event. It's going to be happening July 29th. At Cesar Chavez Pier here in San Diego. Cesar Chavez Pier sits in the shadow of San Diego's only real internationally recognized icon. That's the Coronado Bridge. And we have this amazing lineup of Alkaline alumni and a couple of special guests booked. And we'll be releasing that information really soon. Just not yet. And then the after party is going to continue at Blonde Bar. So it's going to be a great day party. It's going to be going on all day and then going well into the night. So I really loved watching Navjeet and associate producer Tori geeking out with John Reynolds, aka Bass Exotic, on the DJ booking process. So more info on that soon. And speaking of Tori, that silky voice that you'll be hearing soon on this very show, like in the next couple of minutes, that soft whisper that flows into your ear like a playa breeze, but just like a little bit less dust. That's associate producer Tori, who you hear mentioned often on this show. She'll be one of the two voices you'll be hearing in just a minute, along with her impossible to dislike partner, intern Will. These two rascals recently returned from Africa Burn, that other regional burn that is on everyone's bucket list of other burns to attend. Africa Burn, as you may or may not have heard, has grown to a whopping 13,000 people. I'm pretty sure that's the number, which dwarfs pretty much every other regional in the world. The second one on the list, I think, is Midburn. That's like the second biggest one. Most regionals tend to stick to around 1,000 or so. Ours in SD is kind of like a kind of a larger one, actually. It's around 3,500. But Africa Burn is just, you know, massive. It's pretty much the biggest burn event that you can attend outside of, you know, the Gerlach regional, that other little one, I guess. We'd planned to record this conversation before these two even left. So, you know, we're going to get to know the two of them and how they met. Hint, they met on Tinder. The first half of this conversation will be about all the prep that went into their travel experience, which ultimately led to what they saw when they first stepped on foot in the South African playa, which is not really a playa, but you know, whatever. So join us for another burner adventure to another continent for today's episode, which is entitled A Dream of Africa Burn. I don't know, I just kind of thought that sounded ethereal and sexy. Anyway, I go by Mr. Arash, even though nobody calls me Mr. Welcome to Burner Podcast.
Yeah, usually. Can you pass me a beer?
I have your choice.
I have, what kind of beers? Let's see. Did you bring these beers from Australia? No?
Definitely.
Shock tough. I guess, is this a beer?
There's IPA in there.
I have IPA. Is that an IPA?
It's a double IPA.
What is, you know, I don't actually know what an IPA is.
Well...
Can either of you explain it?
It's extra hoppy.
So double IPA is like even hoppier?
I guess so.
Yeah, it'd be even hoppier and have a higher percentage of alcohol usually.
Oh, so double IPA will have more alcohol?
Yeah.
So I'm going to grab that one.
That's usually why I drink IPA.
That's the one that I'm going for. Anyway, how many photos did you take?
Of the burn?
Yeah.
588.
588 photos, that's still on, that's JPEGs and RAWs.
No, that's JPEGs.
Okay.
But a lot of them are like practice photos.
Yeah.
But like the safari, we have 2,000 photos.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, 3 days versus a week.
Hmm. By the way, my voice has been like scratchy all day today. And all day yesterday, my throat was hurting. Like it was like scratchy. But
it feels
I feel
mono.
Yeah, I got mono.
Oh, did you?
No. I think it happened after the ayahuasca. It's like I had like little dry coughs and it felt very similar to when I had done my throat chakra clearing. And the next day I had all these dry scratchy throat and it was like phlegmy and I had these dry coughs. And at the end of the day I looked it up. And I found that, like, a bunch of blogs were had written, like, that's a common thing that happens when you do a throat chakra clearing for the first time. Like, you'll get scratchy throat, and you'll pick arguments with people.
Isn't part of it, like making a noise to, like, clear the throat chakra? Or is...
I did a guided meditation when that happened.
Okay.
But this feels to me a lot like that. And so, yesterday, if you'll remember, like, when we were sitting at brunch, Tori, I was like, I don't remember what it was. I called, like, Arthur out for interrupting me or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But it was like, one of the things that happens is that you'll get more argumentative with people you'll usually never argue with.
Oh, interesting.
And, like, you'll just talk people's heads off. But I remember yesterday I was, like, talking people's heads off. The waiter comes up to talk to us, and I immediately start telling him, "Have you heard of ayahuasca?" And then I start telling him about it. That's funny. And it's usually, like, people will say things like, it's like the same thing they say, like, about Burning Man. They're like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, I've heard of it. I've never been." And I always want to respond, like, "I know you haven't been. Because if you've been, you don't shut the fuck up about it."
That's absolutely true.
This is the pre-photo of Tori at the burn,
yeah,
by the way.
You know, we are recording. You could show me these photos later.
Okay. I mean,
we were on the car ride here, and Will was like, "You know, I brought the photos. I don't know how we're going to work it into the interview."
I think,
like,
you just did.
Really going to work out.
Yeah.
No.
It's an audio show.
Yeah, well, it's worth mentioning that we're planning a photo project. So, you know, a couple of these photos we're talking about, you'll be able to see online later.
Yeah. What is the photo project?
We're going to write blog posts and have photos that outline the principles of the burn.
Yeah.
Especially since this is, like, my first burn, so it's my first big exposure to everything. And we're going to discuss all the principles, including the extra principle Africa Burn has.
Africa Burn has an 11th principle that I really think that, you know, our Burning Man or the state's Burning Man should bring into concept, which is each one teach one.
Yeah.
Which I find...
I thought I was complaining.
No. I take it really to heart because similar to what you just said of, you know, you don't shut up about Burning Man because there's a lot of experiences to be had and things learned and community and all these great things. And each one teach one really emphasizes that what you learn, you teach others inside and outside of the community.
Cause you know, you were telling me about that. Cause you know, there's like the 11th principle movement here.
No, there is.
And it's about consent.
Oh yes. So, I do know about that.
Yeah. So yes. there's clashing marketing happening here. Can we start adding, like, maybe amendments to the principles?
No, they sub principles. Like 11A and 11B. 11A yeah. is consent, 11B is each one teach one.
Each one teach one is about, like, passing the traditions down.
Yeah, so, you know, there's, like, a lot of people that complain, I think, on Facebook after the burn. They're like, "Oh, these people, like, stole a bike or they just did this. And I feel like it's, you know, they don't get the principles and they shouldn't even be allowed to come." And I'm just thinking, like, oh, well, or we should, like, teach them, you know, and be good examples. And
to teach them not to steal bikes?
Teach them not to steal bikes and things like that, or to wear lights
at night.
I've been to...
couldn't the argument be made that, like, radical inclusion would cover that?
Radical inclusion, I feel like, is a little bit more open-ended and less directive. Mm. It's just, you know, making others feel welcome and including them and kind of ties into participation in a sense. But each one teach one, I think, is a little more in depth as far as, you know, explaining things and, you know, communication maybe.
Yeah. Do you think, have they had that, like, forever? Or is this, like, a new addition?
As far as I know, I think it's been there the whole time, but I would have to look into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's go back to the beginning. Associate producer Tori and intern Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I want to go back to when you guys decided that Africa Burn is where you'd like to go. First of all, how long have you been dating?
A little over a year.
Has it been a little bit? Yeah, it's crazy. Like, because yeah. Will just, like, kind of came into our lives and immediately felt right at home, I feel like. Or at least we felt right at home with him.
I would say so. So yeah. That's all the feedback that I'm getting. And usually people are pretty honest with my significant others, so it's the most positive feedback I've gotten.
Yeah.
It's all an illusion.
Yeah, anyway, he's already got like holsters, he's got like a psychedelic t-shirt on.
I like, know, how times have changed.
You just like came so, you came plowing in.
Cat leggings.
Yeah. Pineapple pants. You have any of those yet?
No.
Good. That's really cliche. You don't need to do that as well.
No, I feel like those are just kind of weird.
So you guys made plans to go to Africa Burn before like there had been any plans for Will to go to any sort of burn.
I've been to Burning Man the last 3 years, and I found out. And Will, this last year, I invited Will at the last second, just like a couple weeks before I had come across an extra ticket.
To Burning Man?
Yeah.
Okay.
That I purchased, and I didn't know who I was going to bring. I invited Will. He had just come back from Kauai and didn't really have the time off or the means to make it happen so quickly.
Yeah.
So I went without him, and I missed him. And he expressed that, you know, he wanted to go in the future. Never been to a festival before.
No festival
no
of
festival
any sort.
No festival ever. And
so I just want to clarify. So, like, not even, like, I don't know, like a Coachella type thing? Like a mainstream festival?
No, not before Utopia.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So why?
No.
I didn't know what a festival was.
Okay. How is that? Like, that's just, like, super weird to me. Like, just never been to, like, a music festival where there's multiple bands playing?
No, I just work and travel and... Mm. You know, go to other countries and stuff like that. But, I mean, music was not, like, originally a big passion of mine. Just kind of, like, background to whatever adventure I'm having.
Yeah.
So.
What kind of music were you into? Before this whole thing?
Probably mainly, like, radio music. I like Purity Ring. Classical music's good. Like Alkaline Trio and punk rock were favorite bands in high school and stuff like that.
Okay.
But,
yeah. It's audiobooks. I think that's the most music he gets.
The intro to like Play-Doh or something like that. Yeah. Where did you grow up?
Phoenix.
Okay. You were born there?
Yeah.
Whole family still there?
Basically.
Okay. And how did you end up in San Diego?
Well, I wanted to change departments in my career, so I needed to stop traveling for a while and like plant roots.
Yeah. And then came to San Diego. And then how did you and Tori meet?
Tinder.
Yeah.
I actually met Will and my roommate Arthur on the same night.
Yeah.
And became friends with both of them and started dating Will and moved in with Arthur, and now we're a big happy family. On the same night.
And they were like best friends.
They weren't. I think that was their first hangout night.
Oh, okay.
And
but they just, like, they worked together.
They worked together.
Okay. We worked together. That was my first time at like a techno thing. This has been rooftop.
And so, did you like techno?
I mean, I don't really remember everything that was happening. Like, I had a good time. I enjoyed myself.
Mm.
But, you know, I wasn't like cognizant of everything going on because of, like, you know, everything's new, so. Yeah.
I remember you were very quiet. I remember not getting, like, a read on you. I was like, okay, yeah, he's, like, he's super nice guy. He's got really good energy. I can't figure out if he's enjoying this. We weren't sure if we'd, like, you know, if you're going to be around regularly yet.
I was at, like, Kava? Do you remember? I think I actually met you at Kava.
Yeah, I think so. Night. Oh, it was a couple of events that I remember started hanging out together. And then there was City Hearts. I remember that one very specifically.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
So, I guess back to your question on how we decided to go to Africa Burn.
Yeah, where did that come up?
I found out...
And you hadn't been to Utopia yet.
I have been to Utopia.
No.
With the decision, no. I didn't decide I was going to go till maybe, like, November?
Maybe November. November, yeah.
So you guys went to Utopia and then decided on Africa Burn.
Yeah.
No. I decided on Africa Burn. I found out that it existed, I think it's been around for 13 years.
Yeah.
And it's not just a regional event. It's an actual burn. It's a full week.
Mm.
we found out that they had it, and then I looked it up online, and a month later, I think this was in August, a month later, the tickets were going to go on sale. So, you know, their time difference is significant, and I woke up at like 3 or 4 in the morning or something to buy tickets right at, you know, like their noon.
Yeah.
To see, you know, get in line, and I had no problems. They're only at $100 compared to, I think, $300 or $400 that the Burn is here.
Right.
And I got 2 tickets like I usually do, and I didn't know who was going to come with me. And I was going to go with or without.
She really didn't know who was going to come with her.
Yeah.
I was going to go with or without anyone.
You're Will a fucking burner, still, that's why.
Will and I are still semi, you know, just a couple months into dating and whatnot.
Yeah, he was just a dude from Tinder. We really didn't know if he was going to be around like another one. He's like, I remember us having conversations. We were like, yeah, he's really pretty. That was about it, though.
Yeah, I think you told me you wanted to draw me. That was kind of strange.
I still do. You're very symmetric. So, continue.
Over time, Will's done a ton of traveling, and I've done a ton of festivaling and camping and, you know, radical self-reliance themed events. And he said he would come with, and we decided we were going to go. So from then on, it was a lot of ups and downs emotionally.
Yeah. About, preparing for Africa Burn.
Preparing. It was just, it's above and beyond what, you know, I could conceptualize when I'm used to bringing a full carload and like a trailer behind me and driving 16 to 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then, you know, trying to pack everything that you need for radical self-reliance for being in a desert for a week.
So how were you preparing for it? Like, because obviously, like, I would imagine that's the first thing. I have no fucking idea how I would prepare.
Sit-ups.
Lots of sit-ups? Okay. Crunches, too?
No.
No crunches, just sit-ups.
Full ad.
Yeah. Were you reviewing their website? Were you making contacts with people? How were you planning?
It was a little bit of a whirlwind. But I think the planning, a lot of it came from, you know, attempting to do some online research here and there. I don't think any specific, you know, website or people that I reached out to were, you know, give you the exact recommendation on what type of tent or shade structure you need or, you know, just traveling abroad and preparing like that. But I kept being motivated because you know, we go to the Burning Man here and 70,000 people, and there's people from all over the world, and they do it.
Yeah. That's always like mind blowing to me. Like people that come like from Australia.
Yeah.
You know, we have a couple of listeners in Australia that had messaged us, like asking for like some direction and advice and connections. And that's like, mind blowing to me. And I remember like, she was actually feeling kind of apologetic about like needing to like rent an RV. I'm like, no, if you've got like the money to do that and you can't take all of your shit from Australia and come all the way out here, like fucking rent an RV, you know, fucking everybody who's got shit problems with that.
I'd say if you want to go to a burn that's not in your country or close by, you know, the first steps are to get the survival guide from the burn's website and then to Google other survival guides and then, just Google camps or look up on SoundCloud like that burn
right
for a year and you'll like have a bunch of camps or sound cars come up and then you can kind of go from there and get an idea of like what names are what and start going from there. I think that's the easiest way.
But the thing is, I mean I could be wrong, but when I think about the survival guide that I have to follow for Burning Man, I can't figure out how I would fit all of that like into a couple of backpacks.
Yeah. What I did and what kind of what Will was just saying is, outside of the research is I started researching or outside of the general research, I started researching specific camps and reaching out to those people primarily through Facebook.
Right.
Some of them weren't going to be active the year that we were going. Some of them were, and I got a ton of positive feedback from people that, live there or that have been there. About what to bring and, you know, if a shade structure is needed and that type of thing. But
is a shade structure needed?
Yeah, you know, it's hard because I got like 50-50 responses on saying one or the other, right? And I guess, Like at our United States Burning Man in Nevada, I'd say like a secondary shade is really necessary personally.
Yeah.
And there's people that go without, but
yeah, I can tell you my first year, like I didn't have a shade structure, and it's because I was so overwhelmed trying to prepare for it that I did have a few people that are like, listen, it's going to kind of suck, but you can survive without it. Like you'll just have to crawl out and go.
I think it's the same thing in Africa. There were a couple of days where it was definitely really hot and we're like icing down towels and putting them over our faces just to like survive the heat. And we actually had phenomenal weather. We were told by other people and from what we had read. So, you know, you can survive without a shade structure, but, if you want to be more comfortable, then you should get one. But you also have to be cognizant that, like, if you're joining a camp, they might not have enough space for you to put up a shade structure.
Right. So you guys didn't have one?
We did not have one. We did join a camp, which helped with a lot of the general, like, you know, thought process of supplies, because I knew that, you know, it is radical self-reliance, but, you know, the camp, there's a camp leader and all the people that you're camping with, and everyone wants to be supportive and helpful.
Yeah.
But they were going to provide water and, you know, a camping space and a kitchen space.
Yeah, I mean, it is radical self-reliance, but it's also a community, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think, like, people will get too obsessed about one principle and, like, forget that there's these other ones that are supposed... That's the idea, that they balance each other out. So, I mean, it's realistic that it's fair that if you're coming from the other side of the fucking planet, that you're not going to have every tiny little thing.
I can tell you that I think it was really strategic that we brought our tent.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, you know, were able to pack some other miscellaneous things, and we kind of listed out, you know, all the necessary things and what we were able to bring with us that would still be under the weight limit of being able to bring on the plane.
Yeah.
And
did you purchase anything there?
We purchased some penguin onesies.
Okay. that's important. Yeah.
Yeah. We purchased a lot of stuff there. So the first step was like deciding what we need to travel with, and then
what
might or might not make it.
Yeah.
And then we found out what the local Costco equivalent is. It's called Macro.
Macro.
Yeah. And you have to have a membership, and people in our camp let us like use their card. And then we went there and spent like, you know,
$1,000.
Yeah.
Nice.
$1,000.
What was there anything that was on the preparation list that is different than the burn here? That like stood out in a ride?
No, I wouldn't say anything was different. It was interesting because the burn here is 70,000 people, and the one over in Africa is, I think about like 13,000 people, 10 to 13,000 people. And so significantly smaller. And again, I got not only mixed reviews on bringing a shade structure or not, but mixed reviews on needing a bike or not. Mm.
How big is it, do you know?
As far as like...
Like, how would you compare it to the size of Burning Man?
I'd say you could do a couple laps easily in half a day.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus at, you know, the Burning Man, I mean, it'd take you half a day to get just to one side, right? I would do one side and back.
Yeah, if you're doing things.
If you're doing things, yeah.
My measurement, but then again, mind you, I'm really tall and I walk fast, but... Multiple times this last burn, I was like pounding sand to like get back to my tent before sunrise.
Yeah.
And I remember it felt like it took me, like 45 minutes to get from one end of the city to the other end. Cause we were camped at 2 and D. So we were all the way at the end of the city, and somehow I kept finding myself all the way at the other end of the fucking city right around sunrise time. And I had to like pound my way all the way back. And I remember it took like, I want to say it took a half hour or 40 minutes.
I think that could be reasonable, yeah.
Right.
I'd say it took like 15 minutes at the most.
To go from like the...
One side to the other.
One side of it. Yeah.
So like bike would be helpful, but did you guys have bikes?
We got bikes with Pedals for Peace, and they...
What's Pedals for Peace?
You purchase a bike and they bring it to you and put it together and have it for you with the burn, and then at the end... You can leave it with them, and they donate it to like a local sports group or something that needs it.
Oh,
kids,
wow.
Yeah, a local sports group of kids that are training or something, or you know, just on a team that needs bicycles. So I thought that was really nice. They started just a couple years ago with like I think maybe five bikes, And I think they have at least a couple hundred bikes now. And it's about $150 in U.S. to purchase. And, you know, if you think about it, if we were to purchase one not through Pedals for Peace, we would have had to shop for one. Then we'd have to figure out how to transport it. Then we'd be stuck with this bike that, you know, we don't want to bring back with us.
Did you find the bike to be, like, do you think you could have done it without a bike?
Absolutely. But the bike significantly helped, you know, as far as saving energy and being able to do more things more. Quicker, faster.
Faster, stronger.
Yeah.
But it's also nice. I mean, same thing with all the shopping that we still had to do at Macro. You know, we don't want to just throw a bunch of stuff away or be wasteful afterwards. Yeah. Even though that's not necessarily a principle.
Yeah. Leave no trace. That's a principle.
Leave no trace, but, you know.
I think don't be a dick could be like 12th principle or something.
Yeah. So we donated a lot of extra stuff too. So
we gave away. I mean, we had to, when we got there, we had to buy, like, you know, a cooler. I don't know, the bike we purchased, and they were able to already have it there for us at their own bike camp.
Right.
But we donated everything. We got we had to get, you know, some pillows and stuff just to be comfortable, an extra blanket. And
How long did you guys spend preparing?
Outside.
How many
of the
months?
Burn?
Yeah.
Oh. It's really subjective. I'd say we were really preparing at the last second. Then the last month or so, I feel like, is really when we started to feel it.
Starting to talk about stuff in December and January. And
when was the burn? It was in April.
Huh?
Yeah. It was in April, yeah.
I invited one of my best friend and his fiance to come, and they're traveling the world for a year, so we're also trying to collaborate via the telephone of, you know, where we're going to meet and what stuff, you know, we can help bring for them and what stuff that they need to figure out there. And they've never been to a festival or burn either. And,
somehow I got volunteered to take three virgins to the burn. And I really only signed up for one, and it turned into three somehow.
Wow.
I didn't really realize when I invited them, how much preparation's involved. And, you know, I was talking about how cool it's going to be and how we should really do it, and it's such a good opportunity. And I had my friend Alex agree, but also before he really realized, like, everything that was going to be involved with it, especially with them traveling and everything. So there was a lot of stress as far as, like, getting prepared and what is necessary and what is not and how the environment's going to be like.
But everyone's still stuck with it.
Yeah.
Will and I, because, you know, they're traveling for years, and they're traveling only with carry-on.
Wow.
And, you know, every couple weeks or month or so, they're literally, you know, moving.
Yeah.
So we had to conceptualize not only bringing stuff for us that was kind of, you know, new.
Yeah.
That we were trying to help and prepare them, too, as, you know, goggles and dust masks and, medical supplies. And between Will and I think we had six bags or something. And bringing a lot of stuff for them, too.
Sounds like a lot of expensive luggage fees.
No, actually.
It was all free.
We didn't even pay for our plane tickets.
How?
We do, like, travel hacking with credit cards where you sign up and you spend X amount of time and you get, like, 50,000 bonus points.
Wow.
And you just have to pay, like, an annual fee, and
so the,
that's a whole other
topic. Let's have that. Let's have that as an episode soon. Yeah.
We're there in Africa for 3 weeks, and the round trip ticket was $860. But since we had points, we didn't have to pay a dime.
Wow.
Well, it should have been $1,600 to $2,500, but
the dates that we chose were really specific, and
we just lucked out.
Yeah, we got lucky. We got the tickets really kind of like just a couple weeks before the plane ticket.
So hold on. So you're going to Africa Burn. This was, you made the decision to do this before Utopia, correct?
No, after Utopia.
After Utopia, yeah. Okay. So did you, but you knew she was going.
I mean, she was mentioning it, but it wasn't really like registering.
Yeah. So really it all started downloading it as like what Africa Burn can be after you go to Utopia.
Utopia was like a good taste, but you know, it's a decompression and there's a lot of artwork there and there's no vendors. But it's also a markedly different environment being in a forest and like nothing's actually burning and stuff like that. So, you know, I was introduced to a lot of the ideas and the people, but, I don't think I was really aware of what it would be like then. And then, you know, as I was hanging out with you guys and stuff like that and time went on, it's everything started to make more sense. Yeah.
Cause we've been having conversations recently, Tori and I, about people that we are very close to that are really awesome, amazing people that like don't really get Burning Man. Mm-hmm. But
some
that
of
they're
which
kind
of may or may not have been to the burn.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like we know people who have been to Burning Man, but they don't really get it.
And some of them admit it too.
Yeah. And then we also know people who have not been to Burning Man who completely get it. Like they get the community aspect. Like I wonder, like if you get it, like that's why you're super close to us. Like why? I'm trying to figure out, like, what is your observation? What was it that clicked for you when you started hanging around with these social circles and you went to Utopia? Like, what was it about the community and the culture that stood out to you as like, oh, I see what's happening here. I'm grasping it.
I would say more stuff clicked at actual Africa Burn than before in Utopia. I just knew that I enjoyed events that we went to and the people we hung around and things like that. And
what about them?
You know, everybody's generally pretty nice, but can be kind of a dick and
snarky. Yeah.
And, there's a lot of like giving involved and it's fun. I mean, it's like,
cause that's a natural state for you. You're a very giving and open person.
Yeah. Well, and you see a lot of people that are more willing to like be open to being different than in the regular community. So
default world.
Yeah. So, you know, I noticed like a couple people specifically I met where I'm like, man, like I could just see like they look like they regret most of their life. And if they go there, like they'd be able to be free without being judged and just have fun in, you know, whatever capacity that experience is, whether it's like volunteering and being a ranger or whether it's setting up an art piece or whether it's just running around, you know, naked and painted.
Right.
Like whatever.
And or painted. Sure. Or painted. okay, so you guys get all your shit. Finally, you pack, you know, you get on the plane and you're flying out.
33-hour flight.
33-hour flight from LAX?
No, from San Diego.
San Diego straight to...
the layover and... It's really small, minimal layovers. It's one of the shortest time frames you could get.
We laid over in D.C. and then Ethiopia and I think then down to Cape Town. And we realized why the tickets were so cheap is because we were with
Ethiopian
Airlines. And I mean, the staff was very nice, but like I don't know if it's a big part of the culture, but every single plane we got on, there were people sitting in the wrong seats where they're like, someone's like, that's my seat. And they're like, no, it's mine. They like show the ticket and it's like very obviously not their seat. And they just like look confused. And you know,
it's very interesting the whole time.
Hygiene's a little bit different for a lot of the culture, I think. Mm-hmm. And like the airline doesn't have any of the air vents.
Yeah.
So you're like sitting for 20 hours on a flight without being able to like turn air on.
Yeah.
And like these kind of crappy seats. Whereas like, you know, I don't fly in super nice jets all the time, but most of the time when I'm flying overseas, you know, there's a little bit more space, a little more comfortable and stuff like that. Which is funny because on our last flight from Ethiopia to Cape Town, we're just like getting on the plane and Tori has her fur on. And then like all these people are like, you're going to Africa Burn.
That was one big item that I insisted we had to bring was our fur.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's one of the bigger items, so it wasn't really convenient to pack it inside the luggage. So we're literally carrying all this luggage and have our big furs on.
How was the temperature?
Mainly inside in the airports and in planes until, you know, you get in the Uber or whatever. Yeah. They have Uber in South Africa.
Yeah.
And then you can take it off and, you know, you can carry it still. But
right.
Yeah, we were lugging those things around for 3 weeks.
How long were you in Cape Town, like, proper before you headed out to the burn?
We landed on Friday, which was my birthday.
Yeah.
After a 33-hour flight. And the burn, we left on Tuesday.
We left on Tuesday, and it was about a 4.5-hour drive from Cape Town.
What'd you guys do in Cape Town?
I mean, there's a ton of stuff to do. You have to work backwards from, like, how long it's going to drive, and then... Right. Where you need to go and buy stuff and kind of like that. So we spent probably a day or day and a half just buying supplies. And then other than that, we went to Cape Agulhas, which is the southernmost point in South Africa. You can see like the two oceans meeting.
Right.
Indian and Atlantic Ocean where they meet.
Yeah.
And what other tourism stuff did we do before?
Penguin Beach, where they actually have penguins on the beach.
That was after, though.
Well, that's still in Cape Town, though. And we went to Table Mountain, which is this big mountain. You take this little, what are they called? Trolley car thing.
Yes.
The ones.
Trolley car thing.
Mountain.
I'm going to flash back for just a second to before you guys left for Africa Burn. How did you find your camp that you connected with?
I had been reaching out to a couple people that had, you know, that just Facebook groups that I had found, or camps that I had found through Facebook or through the website. None of them at the time when I was starting to begin my research were active, though. Mm-hmm. But I started asking friends, and, you know, I'm a part of Burner Podcast and just the community to hang out with in general. There's a lot of them are burners, and I started asking around, you know, telling them that I'm going to Africa Burn. And there are a couple friends that I had that had friends that have been or were going to Africa Burn.
Right.
Myra actually, oh no, you know, it wasn't Myra. Myra did introduce me to someone, but another friend of ours, Amy, had introduced me to a friend of hers that lives in LA mm-hmm. on Facebook that went last year.
It all sounds very complicated.
And so I Facebooked her, and, you know, I told her, you know, I don't know what camp to join. She said she joined Aliens Coffee last year, which is kind of like their center camp, and they serve coffee and tea every day, all day. And you can, as part of being at the camp, you volunteer and help serve coffee and whatnot. She had put me in touch with them, and they said that they were almost getting full. I said, "Do you have room for four?" And he said, "Yeah."
Cool.
And
A teen.
Yeah. And is phenomenal. And we were on the WhatsApp group with them, and kept adding people. And
thousands of messages.
Thousands of text messages.
And they provided you with, like, kitchen space?
Provided with kitchen and water.
There were even people buying, like, rebar that said that they would, like, bring it down for us so we'd have it there. Instead of trying to find where to get cut rebar and bent rebar and stuff like that. They're great. Alien Coffee... you know, everybody at the burn, you say you're staying at Alien Coffee Camp, they know right where you are and who you are and stuff like that, and really appreciate it because it's like, it's in the middle, it's fun, they're playing kind of funky wake-up music in the morning, and then they have, like, yoga, and they serve cappuccinos at certain hours of the day, and then the rest of the day is, like, self-serve dehydrated coffee.
Yeah.
Me being, you know... not new to this and kind of like really into the radical self-reliance, I still insisted that our group still bring water.
Yeah.
Well, you never know.
Yeah.
You don't want to be
out. So was that a good decision when you got there?
I think it was because we got there a little bit late and I think, you know, I really only like a day or two after it started, but we got there a little bit later and then our friends that came with us had a significantly larger tent than typical.
Yeah.
An 11-man tent for two people.
it was our friend Vanessa's, it was her first time camping ever and their first festival. And, you know,
that's crazy. They're traveling the world, but she's never camped before.
Yeah.
Basically. And she's also like,
I kind of feel like you do one before the other thing happens. But,
She doesn't like camping, and she's also, like, deathly afraid of the cold in general. It's really painful. So there's, like, a lot of concern as far as, like, being prepared and being warm enough and the right environment. And then the other thing is, you know, we're at Macro, and we're looking at all these tents, and the tents are relatively cheap. And, like, the tent that they got actually had two rooms, and the outside room was kind of like a little Ramada area that you could hang out. So we said, well, hey, like, if you get this tent, then this will be good because, like, we can pitch in a little bit for the tent, and then we'll have a community area to sit and hang out back in our place. But, you know, the problem is that we really didn't know how much space there was going to be when we got there, and there, you know, there was maybe enough room to set up our tent in the regular camp area, and a smaller tent. There wasn't a lot of space, and this, we had, like, these two... Tori's tent is also pretty big.
It's a four-person, but you can stand up in it.
Yeah.
And then this tent is, like, very long. Yeah. So there was no way that we could set that up, getting there on a Tuesday.
We had to camp, like, a block away almost, actually.
Like, from an overflow area.
From the amenities.
Oh, wow. Right?
So it did work out that we brought our own water. And
Yeah,
so we didn't have to go over there every time.
Oh, my.
Which, I think it would have been cool to not be in the overflow. To be, like, with the camp. Yeah. I think we would have had, like, more community with some of the people.
Right.
But it was also cool being off on our own and having our little, like, hideaway to go back to. And
let me go back to, like, you guys getting out there. Did you guys take, like, a shuttle or Uber? How did you get out from the town?
We rented a car ahead of time, and we were trying to look for, you know, a really badass 4x4 of some sort, because all the research that we did the last hour or so, hour and a half maybe, of the road is really rough, and it's kind of likely if you're not super careful, or even if you are, that you're going to get a flat tire.
Yeah.
It's full of something called shale, really which sharp. Is really, basically if you think of like a dirt road, and like the dirt road is like, if you think of it made of a thin layer of cement or something like that. Yeah. And then a lot of those pieces get broken and they're sharp and they'll just tear into your tire.
Ooh.
So,
what kind of car did you guys rent?
We rented a 4x4 truck. We thought it'd be important to get a 4x4 and to get a truck.
Right.
And then, you know, very specific about that. And it was hard to find because, you know, there's 13,000 people going to Cape Lake Town, to the South Africa burn, all trying to rent the same vehicle.
Yeah.
So if you, like, one of the first things you need to do is get the proper vehicle and rent that because they sell out fast.
Wow. We lagged. We really procrastinated.
And we showed up, and they're like, oh, no, we don't have that truck. Someone didn't turn it in yet. Like, do you want to take this, like, little van or this? And I'm like, no, like, I very specifically wanted this vehicle because I need it. I'm going camping. So we got upgraded to, like, a bigger, like, a Suburban, and we had them throw in, like, a trailer.
Yeah.
And it was still barely enough space to take all the stuff we had. But then having a trailer, you have to, like, drive slower and be more careful, too.
And I can say what was a little bit fun is that through our group chat on WhatsApp, is that girl had reached out to, I think it was me originally, but me and Will separately, she didn't know we were dating, and, you know, wanted to see about carpooling because all her friends were going up the day before.
Yeah.
And I said, we got to meet her ahead of time, and she, you know, came with us, which was fun because she lives there, which, you know, made us feel comfortable too about driving out there.
She brought like a hiking backpack and a yoga mat, and her friends brought up other supplies and food and stuff for her. Cool. So space, but even with that, like, we barely had enough space.
So you get through this drive.
So
there's actually people with pop tires on the side of the road and tires in the road just all by themselves. And,
wow.
The thing is that, you know, there's a chance that you can drive and not get a pop tire, but if you do, there's very limited areas where you can get a new tire repair, and there are tire repair places there. But like, even with us driving super cautiously, we got a small hole in our tire, and by the time we got to the place that repairs tires, they were able to fix it.
Yeah.
We didn't have to like change out a flat, but it would have gotten much worse. And we saw maybe 5 to 10 blowouts on the way there.
Yeah, I'd say 5 to 10, depending on, we didn't know if it was a blowout or if they were just on the side of the road for another reason. But
and there's actually it's dangerous too because there's a lot of like blind hills and it's dusty and
dusty.
People try to though everybody specifically talked about how dangerous it is to like cut over a blind hill, people still do it. And like, at least there was at least one fatality involved, with people returning from the burn.
Oh, wow.
And it was an accident, that was caused by someone that was at the burn But the fatality was somebody that was like local to the town. So it's really sad and unfortunate. And, you know, when they talk about like being careful with the drive, you know, it's really worth just taking the extra time on the drive and not trying to rush.
So just go very slowly and watch where you're driving.
Really slow. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that, you know, whoever's thinks that they're used to the road or thinks you're going too slow, they speed up and try and pass you. It's only a 2-lane dirt road, you know, and then they pull in front of you. And they literally, I was driving on the way in, I couldn't see at all for up to like, sometimes up to 60 seconds or more.
Wow.
And I'm still, I don't want to stop, you know, because of people behind me or what they might be. And so I'm still trying to drive really slow. And it's like a real white
house. Does the traffic look like that giant line going into Burning Man?
No.
Plus, if you're you're coming from out of country, you know, mind you that you're going to be driving on the left side of the road.
Right.
The wheel's on the right side of the car.
Yeah.
And then if you have a stick shift, you're going to have to be able to use a stick shift on the other side of the car on the other side of the road. And in our case, it was also with a trailer. So there's a lot of like, you know, different things involved that you might not be used to with driving as well. There's a picture of the road.
Yeah, the listeners to totally look at those pictures. So, Tori, it's hard enough to like just travel to another country. Why? Why go to a burn in Africa?
It's interesting because I'm 27 years old now.
Yeah.
Birthday was the other day. And I went to Burning Man in the last 3 years, and just all the preparation into it. It's so much work, and it's often stressful, even if you've done it a couple times. It never gets any cheaper for some reason. But just, you know,
because your tastes go up and you want new things.
Or you have to replace things or something. The community is so phenomenal, and just the appreciation of everyone being in it together. And, you know, helping each other out, and the gratification of doing all the work and having such a great time and being free, and everyone's free. And I always felt year after year more and more that it was like preparing me for something bigger and better. And
apocalypse. Totally.
You know,
zombie apocalypse.
I joined the Burner podcast, I think a little over a year ago also. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just think that I've known that I've wanted to travel the world also. And immediately,
she really wants to go to South Africa.
And I really wanted to go to South Africa for some reason. And as soon as I found out that there was a Burning Man in South Africa, it just made perfect sense I've done this 3 years. This is my time to shine.
Yeah.
And conveniently, you know, love of my life has traveled the world, even though he's new to festivals. I'm not new to festivals and newer to traveling the world. And
so you guys were able to like really like balance each other off on like needs and skill sets.
We took a practice trip to Maui in January and slept in a car for a week.
That was true.
And we did phenomenal.
Yeah.
We had a phenomenal time sleeping in the car.
So the entrance to Africa Burn, what is it? What happens there? Is there a line? How long did you wait to get in?
I mean, first you drive over a hill and you kind of like, you can see the little town, the Binkering, I think is what they call their.
So the Esplanade, it's the Binkering.
Okay.
And then there wasn't for us a really long line, but you know, we did drive up and get out of the car and become proper virgins and make dust devils and.
Yeah.
Dust Ring angels.
A chime.
Dust angels.
Dust angels.
Mm-hmm. And naked man ringing a giant bell, instructing everyone else to ring the bell. And
nice.
Get down in the dirt and make dust angels.
Oh, and it was it was great, too, because, you know, my friends Alex and Vanessa, like, they were stoked to go with the impression that, you know, I'm saying that it's going to be really cool, but it's probably going to be cool, but like not as cool as I'm like saying it's going to be. And I was like showing them footage from other Africa burns, and I'm like, look at this. It looks amazing. Yeah. Like the artwork and this. And they're like, yeah, well, it probably looks better in the video. So, we show up, and I think that Vanessa was actually very like surprised and impressed, and she had a phenomenal time. She actually, talked about, you know, thinking about going to Burning Man and Black Rock City in the future,
yeah.
which was really cool to see. But the best thing was, you know, they totally don't know what to expect. Like, we show up and we go to park this car with a trailer and I have to like back up, and it's the Burning community, so people are really nice, and someone comes off offers to help me back up the truck like into this little space. And he's like also completely naked.
Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, I'll help you pack it up. And he's like, they're just like looking at him. And like afterwards, like, he's like, oh yeah, I was happy to help you. Do you want like a coffee or anything? Like, gives me a hug. Yeah. And which felt like a perfect way to like enter into our camp.
Yeah.
And what's funny is that, you know, I've been doing festivals for like 7-ish years now. And never once have I had to go to the medic tent. Once ever. Yeah. Anything. I had to go to the medic tent twice in Africa.
Why?
First time, for some reason, I got this...
pink eye?
I don't know. It was really awful eye infection. My eye was, like, swollen, and it was oozing.
Ooh.
And,
It was the first night where we came. We decided that, you know, we had the whole night. We're going to, like... We just got to camp, but we're not going to sleep. We're going to stay up all night and watch the sunrise. And Tori's like, oh, I think my eye's kind of bothering me. And then it starts to get light outside. And, like, she, like, shines a light on it. And there's, like, this pus coming out.
It's true. I asked him to look at it, like, a couple hours earlier. Yeah. He's like, oh, it looks fine. But so as the sun's coming up, it's, like, really messed up.
And I brought a lot of medical supplies, but, I mean, not, you know.
For a pussing eye.
Not everything you need. Yeah. The medic tent was really great, like... the nurse was really helpful, and they gave us like eye ointment and washed her eye out. And
what did they say? Was it pink eye?
No, I don't think it was pink eye. It says eye infection, to use this cream, and literally had to every couple of, like 4 hours or something. We had to stop whatever we're doing, and he had to put this cream. I'd close my eye and put, or keep it open, I guess, and put cream in my eye.
And then she got better like a couple of days later, and then. Any sort of mosquito bite that she had turned into the size of a softball. I'm like,
I got these horrible mosquito bites, and it just swelled up. And
so there are bugs at Africa.
Itchy. It was so itchy. I've never experienced something so itchy.
Apparently, it was worse than this year than other years, probably because of the nice weather and certain
the drought.
Things. Yeah,
and the drought. There was a lot of standing water, you know, in miscellaneous places, I guess, and it was causing increase of mosquitoes and other bugs.
And I just told her, I'm like, oh, you're gonna be fine. I'm like, you don't have to worry about it. Just keep it clean. And then, you know, Vanessa's like, oh, it looks really bad. I think it might be infected. And
you
then,
might
like,
have an abscess, and they might have to drain it. And
I'm like trying to keep Tori calm. And she's like, you were keeping me calm. Now I'm kind of nervous. But
cancer.
It also seemed like you didn't really care. And Vanessa's like, cares if I'm going to be okay. And like, so we sent her to the medic tent again. And
oh, my God. No, what's the worst is that then all these bites started oozing.
Oh, my God.
Ridiculous.
The mosquito bites started oozing?
Yeah.
Were they mosquitoes?
I don't know. So I don't know. The nurse was like, oh, you're just going to have to power through it. And I was like, oh, my God.
Like you again.
So Tori took a day where it was, like, incredibly hot and just slept in the tent all day. I missed a whole day.
And you know what? I can tell you that, in my perception, and Will can say otherwise, but I think overall I had a really great positive attitude. It's like, kind of, I mean, it's a little bit shitty of a situation, but I think, you know, I kept doing all the things, and I had reflected.
Right, because you're a fucking burner.
Yeah, and I this is my first, you know, thing, and like...
It's not your first rodeo.
It's my first rodeo, and I was really happy to be there, and like, I kept a really great attitude. It was just, you know, inconvenient a little bit, but I, you know, after the second incident with all the mosquitoes and the oozing everywhere, and twice, you know, I actually told all three of them, like, you know, to be completely honest, if this was going to happen to anyone, I'm really happy that it happened to me.
Yeah,
because
you can
power
through it.
Because I've done this before, and this is your guys' like first, you know, festival for the most part, or first Burning Man, and I'm not sure if, you know, I feel like it would be more unfortunate if it happened to someone else. And
yeah. No, you're right. I agree.
But
enough about your ailments. So tell me, like, Tori, as somebody who's been to Burning Man enough times, like, so your first night that you're walking around on the playa out there. Is it a playa, by the way? Is it a lake bed?
Yeah.
Okay, they don't call it a playa. But they do call it a playa.
They call it the playa.
It's
not officially the playa, but, you know, people refer to it as a playa, but they have a different name
for it. Is it a dried lake bed?
I don't think it's a dry lake bed.
Because that's why ours is called the Playa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just like a valley.
Okay. Okay. So what's, how is it different or the same as Burning Man?
In general, same quality of event, same quality of people, same feel.
Does it look the same? Like, is the city laid out the same as Black Rock City?
It's laid out very similar.
So so there's like an esplanade where like the shiniest, most lit up things are.
Yeah. And it's called the Binkering. Mm. But yeah, there's like the main, you know, Binkering or esplanade.
Does it just basically feel like you're at Burning Man? Like, does it feel different? It
almost felt exactly like I was at Burning Man, except not so much commotion, I guess, in a sense, because it's a lot smaller.
Okay.
It actually kind of felt like the whole city shut down at some point.
Really?
Yeah, it did really feel that way. Huh. There's like, you know, some of the main stages that were still happening, but as they're like almost like relatively empty compared to when they were populated.
Right.
I don't know if it's true at the regular burn, but there's a lot of talk and concern about being considerate for having sound out of place as far as...
We've had that.
There are conversations about it at the burn, but I don't feel like...
I think it's a bigger topic at Africa Burn.
Yeah.
Because there's a loud zone and a loudish zone. And even those at like 3 or 4 in the morning, like at least during the week, generally like shut down and there's not as much going on.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's definitely like... There's zones in Black Rock City and an open playa and deep playa, but like there's some rules and regulations on it, but then there's also, I feel like, just as many people who think it's fucking bullshit and they hate it and they want it to be loud all the time.
Yeah.
So, but that's interesting that that's a conversation that you felt like, if you were picking up on that conversation as just like average citygoers, I would imagine that that conversation is more apparent there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. This is totally anecdotal, of course.
I think the, in Black Rock City, you know, the ground is a lot softer and more plain sandy, I guess. And then, you know, a lot more, I've been to the burn in Black Rock City where when there's a ton of wind activity, you know, there's a lot of dunes and hills and whatnot. There wasn't a lot of that going on. A ton more shale and rocky, actually. So we were setting up our tent kind of like on rocks almost.
Oh, wow.
Ish, really? Mm. Yeah, a little bit.
Bending was the, rock. What about like police presence? Were you noticing law enforcement presence?
Yeah.
They're there. I feel like I noticed a little bit more. Well, I know they have the ranger station and whatnot. As a side note, there's actually a ranger exchange between the Burning Mans.
Oh, no, I don't mean like Black Rock Rangers, but just law enforcement. Like, was there like local police departments
patrolling? There definitely is, yes.
I didn't notice. Maybe Will did.
I know.
So not as much as Black Rock City.
Not as much
as the consensus from people that had been to Africa Burn prior years was that there was less police present last year and the burn was better last year.
So it's exactly like Burning Man in that sense.
I don't know if I noticed. I think maybe I've noticed increase kind of police at Black Rock City. And in comparison, it felt minimal or almost non-existent in comparison. Noticed a lot of... hardly anyone was wearing lights at Africa Burn.
Really?
At nighttime. It was kind of awful.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It was almost so bad that, you know, if you're going to call somebody a dark tard... Like, after a while, you'd get tired of saying it, and you'd also feel like you're stupid because there's so many people without it that, like...
You can't keep calling everyone out on it.
Yeah. I wonder if there's, like, people that just don't even understand the phrase. They're like, that guy's fucking racist. Did it feel more international?
No, not at all.
Was it just all Americans? No, or was it all Americans South Africans?
Still the novelty, apparently. Uh-huh. Someone else's words, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of South Africans.
South Africans.
Yeah, a lot of South Africans.
Say it's still...
In Europe.
Still predominantly white. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, even in Cape Town and whatnot, in the culture, South Africans can still, you know, represent white.
Well,
but there weren't as many.
Accents-wise, were you picking up that there was a lot of Europeans, Australians, I would imagine, because it's closer?
I don't know if I met a lot of Australians. We met some Americans, we met a lot of South Africans, and then, you know, people from Europe generally, mm-hmm. or like Israel and stuff like that. Because they're doing, like we met someone that was doing the Ranger Exchange and...
On the plane there.
Yeah. And then we saw them at the burn too. And
oh, cool.
They're like, you know, from Israel and being a ranger at Africa Burn, and someone was going and taking their place. And then they had like a tent set up for them already and supplies and really great
things. We're definitely running into a couple, maybe even more than a couple people that we had met either on the plane there or just there in general, running into them, you know,
and then after the burn too, like we ran into people from the burn. We'd recognize like the wristband and stuff like that.
Oh yeah. People keep their wristband on. I still have mine on.
Do they have a man?
They have the clan, which is similar to the man.
What is the clan?
I feel like I have to research it again.
How could you describe it? So what's the, is the figure though, right? In the middle of the city?
It looks
figure
like
in the middle of the city. It's the same concept as the man. I think it's a little bit more tailored to the culture of being like more tribal.
Right.
It looks kind of like a man, but with like multiple arms and legs.
It looks kind of like a community or a group of people, like standing together, running or.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. They call it the clan, and you know, unfortunately.
And that's still like burns. Like there's like a burn night.
Yep.
And then there's a temple burn.
That, and there's kind of like a temple. Unfortunately we didn't actually get to see the clan burn. It was supposed to be ready. It's supposed to be done. And
Friday,
and I think we were leaving Sunday morning, and it still wasn't done.
They changed it to be Friday so that it would be available for more people, and then just, you know, the last couple of days there was wind, and it was too complicated, and it wasn't built in time, and it was delayed until, like, Sunday or Monday.
Yeah, then they were trying to do it Saturday, and then they were trying to do it Sunday, and I don't know, we left. I don't know if they even did it on Sunday.
Oh, wow. So you didn't get to actually see a burn.
There were some art projects that were burning.
Yeah.
So lots of art projects like, burning, but not the main ones.
Right.
So we stayed an extra day. We were supposed to leave Saturday, and we stayed till Sunday to watch it, and we still didn't get to see it.
Yeah. So tell me about, like, you know, let's say, like, after you've settled in, like, what was like, a night that really stood out, some exploration that you did? Tell me about, like, what a night is like out at Africa.
A night or a day?
A night.
Fuck the day.
Well, sure, tell me about the day. Whatever you want to
know. I mean, in the daytime.
Tell me a story.
We became Olympians, which was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. So, it's funny because, you know, our other friends, there was their first festival. I was their first Burning Man, and they heard all, you know, rumors about, like, orgy tents or, you know, naked people, blah,
right.
blah, which we saw a lot of naked people.
Was there an orgy tent?
There was an orgy tent.
Orgy dome, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, orgy dome.
Okay.
Well, you can tell the story.
My friend Alex really wanted to go to the Sex Olympics, so we went, and there were not enough participants, so we actually got to participate in the Sex Olympics, Tori and I, and...
You're going to need to elaborate on that, like, a lot more.
Yeah, so, you know, the first thing that they have you do is, you know... undress each other with your teeth, which is not something that I was really expecting to do in front of my friend and his fiance, you know, let alone all these other people.
How many people?
Not that many. Which I don't know if that makes it better or worse, but
there was an audience.
15 people.
Okay.
And we did pretty good. We got bronze.
Okay. So. Oh, nice.
Overall, yeah.
Yeah.
So you undress her with your teeth.
She undressed me with her teeth, and then we're like standing there naked, and like
we won that round.
Yeah,
oh, we got the fastest.
deep throating cucumbers. And
Will won that round. All the participants. It's a two-man team.
I tied for first.
Okay.
And then there was like spanking and like lap dances, all sorts of debauchery you can't even imagine.
I mean, to get a little bit graphic for entertainment purposes, there's this one where the females had to do where you have a
I've never seen our cat get so aggressively into somebody before. Listeners can't see this, but my is like just getting into Tori's head.
You had to display your Kegel powers, and basically it involved using a tampon to pick up a water bottle and then subsequently a larger water bottle and being able to hold it. So being able to clench a tampon tied to a string and pick up the water bottle with your
wow
parts.
You did
not win that round.
She came in last place, actually.
And I did. I'm not.
And one of the women, she was. I mean, she had a very voluptuous figure, and she was like, "Well, I'll do this one, but you know, like, you guys might want to stand back because, like, it could splatter, and it's like that time of the month and stuff like that."
Bloody mess.
She was a team player and she did really well.
She said anyway. Bloody mess, and it wasn't like a language thing. Like, oh, it's gonna be just a bloody mess.
Actual bloody mess. It was that time of the month, and she was still gonna participate in the tampon games.
Because Burning Man's about participation.
Oh my god.
Which is great. I mean, one of the biggest lessons I learned from the burn is that every good experience I had came from somebody giving something without expecting something in return. Some sort of, like, participation or gifting. And, you know, when we go to the Sex Olympics and there's not enough people, then we decide to participate in it. And then there's actually a Sex Olympics and it was really fun. So, I mean, those really kind of stood out to me. It was that, like, everything that happened was that, like, I went out of my way to involve somebody, or someone involved me or did something nice for me or the community that... It was just like,
yeah,
it was really cool.
I think Will's favorite thing to tell people about Africa Burn is that we became Olympians.
And then we got bronze.
Yeah, nice.
I mean, granted, there were only
the synchronicity of things up there. Like, did you have any like synchronicity moments? Like magical, I can't believe I just ran into this person, or how's like you're thinking about a thing and then all of a sudden that thing shows up. It's okay if you didn't.
I don't know if I did offhand. I might think of something, but I don't know if I did.
We actually had 7, but we're not really privileged to discuss them this time.
So we were earlier, we were discussing, like, you were saying, when you, like, got it. Yeah. Like, when you got it. Like, you get it, what it is. Like, you get Burning Man. What was it? Was there a moment, or was it like an overall experience that you observed?
I mean, there were a lot of small moments where I really like felt those kind of things and just appreciated certain things that were happening. But maybe on one of our last nights, it was really cool. It was like Friday and it was sunset and we're dancing out by this like art car called Loki the Rhino.
Yeah.
And it's overlooking the whole Bankering or Playa, and I see like the sun setting and great music's playing, and we run into
Quentin,
which is someone we met earlier in the week.
I was going to mention Quentin too. He's one of my favorite experiences.
Yeah, so it was like this culmination of the experience, because someone we met in the like one of our first nights, we ran into at the end of the burn, and it was like the right place and the right time, beautiful music, and the sun was setting, and then all of a sudden the Rubik's Cube and the off in the distance, it starts to light on fire, and that's the first art piece I see burning. Yeah. So the Rubik's Cube is having this like fiery burn, and the sun is having this like fiery sunsetting experience, and it was just really pretty. And after that, we met up with Alex and Vanessa via our walkie-talkies, and they had run into people that they met at the like shopping earlier, the macro store. So we're all going around like the different stages and having fun. And we end up at the train station, and the spirit train had pulled in, and these two like sound stages are playing with each other.
Spirit train is an art car.
And the spirit train is an art car.
But it's a train.
And it's a train.
Yeah.
And it's a dragon.
Okay. Let's add another layer to that. Yeah.
But it was just a really great experience, and the music was so beautiful, and there's all these people having a good time. And just really felt like you know, it sunk in that you're home and this is a good place to be, and the whole week was just like fantastic, and
yeah,
it was kind of like a high. It was really cool.
Did anybody have breakdowns? Like, is that the burn? Like, I almost like taking bets on who is going to have a breakdown at one point and just burst into tears and start kicking shit.
No, I don't think, at least not in our group.
I think there's a little bit of, like, the most stress or even fighting that happened was, like, preparing for it. And yeah, then when we got there and, like, trying to set stuff up and talk about what we need to do and stuff like that. And then, like, after all that was gone, we were set up. It was just a lot better.
What was the most surprising thing about it that you weren't expecting, had no frame of reference for? After all the preparation and everything.
That there were no disasters except for Tori's medical conditions.
Like Will the weather was really upset that, you know, we had stressed so much about preparing properly and, you know, it's preparing with his friends that didn't really know what to expect and whatnot. And that the weather was so perfect and, you know, no, nothing negative happened.
There were only like a couple tiny dust storms. It wasn't cold. There was some rain and flooding issues in the beginning.
I'd say the, I don't know. I didn't really expect that Will and I were going to be participants of the Orgy Dome.
So you did go to the Orgy Dome.
We did go to the Orgy Dome. We found it on Alex's behalf. So that was fun. We can say we're participants now.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what's funny is that as many burns as I've been to, I don't think I had seen, you know, a show of like two naked girls and guy in the middle of like the temple, basically just all squealing and like rubbing up against each other for so long, like doing some type of weird ritual.
It was a ritual. It wasn't sex.
No, it wasn't sex. They were just rubbing up against each other and squealing for like at least 15 or 20 minutes that we saw.
I mean, I feel like that'd be a little awkward next to all the crying people that are saying goodbye to like loved ones and stuff.
It wasn't
same. I don't think that one was the temple.
Oh, I don't know what the temple was.
No, I think the temple was the other one back behind that we went to, the wood structure. Oh. It was kind of hard to tell because everything's different.
Yeah.
But this was...
temple wasn't as obvious there or dramatic.
This was a art structure that represented the baobab tree, which is like a big cultural tree in South Africa. It looks like basically a tree's been planted upside down and people look at it as like kind of a tree of life and supplies the community with a lot of things.
20 or 30 people holding hands to wrap around the tree. That's how big it is.
So the art structure represented this huge tree and you could climb up into the top of it. And then down in the center was this large seed. And I don't know if that seed's supposed to be actual size, but it was like bigger than this couch.
Right.
And you could like Tori and I climbed up on it and, then there were these like three naked hippies like standing on it naked, just screaming. And we thought that they were, when we were up on top, cause they all had long hair, we thought that they were all girls. And then we realized that there was like this, little guy and then these two girls. And it was like, ooh. Yeah.
It feels like from the stories that you guys are telling that there is like more nudity there than there feels like there is now at Burning Man. Because, like, the nudity is definitely, like, slowed down at Burning Man in the past couple of years.
I'd say so, except, you know, when everyone gangs together on, like, nude bike day.
Yeah.
I felt like there was, it was more nude the first time, the first or second medic tent visit. There was a guy in there completely nude.
He had the biggest...
He had the biggest cock that I've ever seen, I think, on video or in person.
And it was, like, flaccid. He's just, like, flopping it around. Like.
I don't know. I don't know if he was... I think... I don't know what he was doing.
He was the doctor.
He could have been. He was there for quite some time. Didn't look like he was in line or, like, in the waiting room. And no one was, like, attending to him. So I'm not quite sure.
I think he just wanted people to see, you know? Feels like it needs to be shown.
What's the biggest piece of advice you'd give people preparing for Africa Burn?
I think you can do it. I did it. I recommend bringing your own tent and just like, you know, if you can fit whatever you can fit, that's, going to be on the weight limit of the plane. And just know that you can buy things there or coordinate with the camp and have others, you know, help you out. I think the biggest thing I could say is I would do it again.
Yeah. Was there anything that did or did not meet your expectations, Will?
I had a fantastic time. I think that, you know, I expected it to be smaller like it was. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be a really cool experience to go to Burning Man where you just can't see everything. We still didn't see everything at Africa Burn because even when it's smaller like that, like you just miss stuff. But I had a really good time. I think the only thing was that I didn't expect the city to shut down at certain parts of the night.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like at Burning Man, the city doesn't quite shut down, but there is a segment of time, like right before sunrise and around sunrise, where I feel like it's harder to find shit to do because everybody's like run out of all their energy throughout the night. And I've had that a couple of times where like I'm riding around on my bike, I'm like, God damn it, where's everybody? You know, there's people wandering around, but they're kind of like in a little bit zombie mode. So there's like this little chunk of time before like breakfast begins and after like the night shift is crashing out, where it's hard to find like higher energy stuff or concentrations of people.
The last couple nights there, I didn't go out and see it, but I heard it from my tent. There was some sort of high energy thing happening. And the only way I can describe it is carnival techno.
Will's really upset about this.
it was just like, it was so kooky. It sounded kind of like clown music or carnival music or something.
For hours.
And my thought process was that like, not only did somebody have to decide to create this music, then another individual had to decide that like they really enjoyed this music and that they wanted to share it with the people at Africa Burn at 4 a.m. on a Thursday.
For hours.
And like
we're
all
trying to sleep in our tent.
I'm just continuously like astounded that like, you know, the world's always full of surprising things that like that this many like this thought process can take place and someone's like, no, this is good music. I need to share this carnival music at 4 a.m. on a Thursday. And I really just wanted to go outside and see, like, what art car was playing this, like, carnival techno two nights in a row. Huh?
What was it?
I don't go look.
Oh, you didn't go look?
Yeah.
You know, fuck that.
It seems like that kind of music that you'd, I don't know how to describe it, but you'd, like, be dancing with your, like, elbows back and forth and your knees out wide like a cowboy or something. And some sort of, like, cowboy techno hoedown.
All right. Associate producer Tori does a lot of work on Burner Podcast Presents Alkaline, our music show.
Alkaline Live. We're having a party July 29th.
Yes, good
save
plug. Good plug. July 29th in San Diego. How was the techno?
Minimal.
It was a lot of minimal techno?
No. There wasn't a lot of techno proper.
Really? Do you think South Africans just aren't into techno as much?
I don't think so.
What was the music like? What was the sound of...
I don't know what the general Burning Man genre is, but it felt very Burning Man-ish. Housey, you know.
A little tech-housey.
Tech-housey, yeah. I wouldn't say it would... I don't even think regular Burning Man goes into hard techno,
though. I think people mentioned psytrance.
Except for Daddy Carl, a.k.a. Carl Cox.
Yeah, Daddy Carl.
Would you say, like, psytrance?
A lot of trance. I'd say trancey, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What will you do different next time when you go?
To any burn?
No, to Africa Burn.
Oh.
Bring less things.
Bring less things, yeah. Yes. Bring less things. It's hard to say more participation, but more participation even.
Right.
I think maybe make more connections because, you know, we had a group, a total of four of us. I think it's kind of around us a little bit more than you know, it had to be necessarily or it could have been.
They went on a lot of their own adventures.
They went on their own adventures.
But I feel like they met more groups of people than we did.
Yeah. And I think, to be honest, that my initiative now is to travel to different burns because that's going to get my travel bug out. And I'm also still going to feel like I'm not missing out on the community, right? Because they have a mid burn that's in Israel.
Yeah.
They have a Kiwi burn.
I'm in the same boat.
That's how I'm going to travel. And that's what I want to focus on.
I'm in the same boat. Like I want to travel more, but I get so much satisfaction from burn events that I can access from living in San Diego that it's hard to like justify it.
And my thought too is to make it even cheaper besides doing the travel hacking with the credit cards is reaching out to the Burning Man community, you know, when I'm planning on going to that burn
right.
and just couch surfing.
Yeah.
I think that that's 150% doable. And I think people would be welcoming and travel with them and save, you know, just pitching on gas and, you know, help cook and clean and whatever Brenner's Couch does with Mel.
Yeah.
And we also, we did our best, you know, Into the Fire did some interviews with people from Africa Burn.
Right.
And we also did our best to try to track them down while we were there.
Into the Fire?
No, the interviews that Susie did.
Super Suze, who produces and hosts Into the Fire, which listeners can access at burnerpodcast.com, is another podcast that is recorded out of the Bay Area. And they did an episode about preparing preparing for Africa Burn.
And it was actually really great because, like, listening to them helped me get more of an idea of what to expect. Mm-hmm. And, like, we found one of her people she interviewed was Skippa. And
he's a ranger.
And he's with the Art Sluts, where they go around, they help burners build their art projects if they don't have enough hands. And we found his car where he was staying in, and we left, like, a sticker and a note.
And
we hope that we got it, but we didn't find him. And then another thing I thought was really cool was, you know, Tori always talks about Rockstar Librarian and all the work she does to help collaborate what kind of DJs are going to be where at Burning Man. And she was at Africa Burn, and we ran into her and talked with her and did an interview, and that was really cool too. Because, you know, hearing about these, like, people or names and having it all work together and making it more real and making connections and stuff like that. So that was cool.
That's awesome. So you want to go again next year, or are you going to look for, like, a different year, different location, different country?
I feel like maybe next year, a different country.
Yeah.
I think a different country.
I'd love to go to Midburn.
Yeah. I would love to go to Midburn too. And I think you'd be the perfect partner in crime.
Yeah. All right. Intern Will, you're going to have to stay here.
We're going to need your services.
Yeah.
I'll go to the one in Denmark.
Yeah.
What's that one called?
White People Burn. Midburn, you know, it's this closer to my motherland, so
yeah.
I feel really excited about, like, exploring that.
We'll get you a credit card here shortly.
Yeah, I gotta get a credit card. So there's this video that went viral of, like, this bachelor party where these guys are all having dinner, and a couple of the guys see that Bill Murray is having dinner, like, a few tables over. And they go and ask Bill if he can come over and give, like, some life advice to the groom. And he declines at first, politely. And then, so on his way out, though, he pops by and he's like, listen, too late for this guy. He's already engaged and everything. But, you know, the advice that he gives the rest of the guys is like, listen, you meet somebody, right? If you meet somebody you think they might be the one, buy a plane ticket right now and go travel around the world. And if after you go through all that travel, all that piss in hell, and you get back and you don't want to kill each other, get on one knee and propose right there in the airport. And that's the advice that he's, like, giving them. So I remember I told this story to a couple of people, and I've had multiple people give the same response. They're like, oh yeah, or just go to Burning Man. If you can survive 1 week out there and not kill each other, you're good.
I think that's great advice. You know, Will and I get along really phenomenal, and there's a lot of support and love and, like, very minor, friction for the most part. And I think that the most friction that we had was preparing for the burn. And I've heard and seen, personally, and just heard other stories of, you know, how it's people breaking up at the burn or all these things. Cause, you know, it's just a lot going on and, can be stressful and depends on how people handle it. And there's some stressful moments, and it, like he said, I think preparing for it was the most stressful, but
I feel like
to be his partner.
That's powerful advice. Like, I mean, I would tell people that, like, you think you meet somebody and you think they might be the one, go to Midburn, go to Africa Burn, like, plan to go to a burn in a different country. Like, that is, it's a lot to put on your shoulders.
That was a big thing I heard from one of your other podcasts was don't make any life-changing decisions for 30 days after the burn.
Yeah.
Whether it's breakups or friendships or jobs or whatever.
Yeah, that's an excellent transition, actually, because that was advice that Jake Tyson from Pinkheart gave me. I had, when I was heading out to my first burn, I was already active in the community. And I was co-lead on San Diego's regional project. And I did have multiple people reach out and just give like advice, which like, it wasn't even like, I hadn't like called them. They were just like, all right, here's some things that you should know. We know you, we know, blah, blah. So I remember that was one of the most important ones, because you get back and you get the post-burn blues. Mm-hmm. Did you, Will, experience any post-burn blues?
I don't think so specifically. I mean, we just kind of had a unique situation as far as like traveling to this burn, and Troy had a family member that was very sick and passed away right before the burn. And mm-hmm. I had one that passed away like 2 days into being in South Africa. And then my other grandma passed away like a week later or a week and a half later. So, yeah. It's really hard to like distinguish different emotions that were happening, because right. there was a lot of life events that happened.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, not only that, but we're at the burn and for a week, and then for 2 weeks afterwards, we went traveling on a safari at Kruger National Park. And then we went to Victoria Falls, which is the largest waterfall in the world, and took a helicopter tour and went bungee jumping. So we didn't like have to go straight back to the default world after the burn. We also right. like still were going on adventures.
There was a transition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I can say that I think I would do differently. The first year I went to Burning Man, I just, you know, went, and the last 2 years I participated in an art project, which I feel like made a huge difference in how I felt like I was contributing, and, you know, as part of a team, and had a little bit more structure at my burn. I didn't, even though we were part of camp and we volunteered at Africa Burn, I wasn't part of an art project. And there's time constraints too when you're traveling from another country right. to be able to get there early and help. But I feel like my next burn, I think I'm going to make more of my next, either here or, out of country, but, you know, specifically out of country, I'm going to make more of an effort to see if there's a way I can actually participate with the, build up and take down of an art project. 'Cause I think that would add more value to my yeah. and reason to go.
Yeah. And I mean, it's really cool too, because I didn't even realize this, but you don't have to necessarily be super prepared to make an art project either, because we're at this one stage, and there's this really cool horse that was built out of all this like driftwood looking stuff, and it looked like it was running in action, and it was really cool looking, and it was right next to the I think it was right next to the baobab tree or close by. And we met the artist of that, and she's like, oh yeah, me and my boyfriend, we actually just took the extra pieces of wood that they didn't use for that project, and then we like made this horse out of it.
Huh.
So, you know,
I imagine they've had some practice like with wood.
Yeah.
Work, though. Absolutely. That thing was phenomenal.
But still, I mean, it just goes to show that you can bring creativity yeah. and art and expression in a lot of different ways. And it doesn't have to be, you know, if you're traveling, it doesn't have to be this huge thing. You can find different ways to do it
that are
really cool.
Yeah. I think that's a important, powerful lesson. I have no idea how I would go to any burn and not be involved with something.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree.
It's hard.
I mean, luckily, like I said, we joined a camp and we signed up for volunteer shift. It wasn't super hefty, but Will and I made a specific effort to, I think most days we would go around and demoop and straighten out the chairs and wipe down the tables and make a miscellaneous lost and found. And just
demoop. Demoop is the phrase.
Demoop.
Yeah. Because moop is matter out of place. Demoop means you're walking around like picking shit up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're helping like to leave no trace. And no, because I had this back and forth with a couple of people already where like this guy was like, yeah, man, I love that guy. He's just walking around mooping. I'm like, wait, no, that's a negative thing. He's like, no, he's clearing shit up. I'm like, oh, I see what you mean. No, that's not called mooping, because mooping is when you leave shit. And I asked like two other people about that, like over the course of the next couple of weeks, and they had the same response. Like, oh yeah, you know, mooping, you're cleaning things up. I'm like, no, wait a minute, that's not right. Demooping is the phrase. I'm gonna stick to that. That's powerful.
That actually brings me to the most difficult part of the burn for me was washing coffee cups.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had these two wash bins. One is a wash and one's a rinse. And then you go and you like pick up all these dirty coffee cups and you try to clean them up, and then, you know, people want to be helpful also, so before even asking, they just throw their coffee cup in like the rinse bin, And your rinse water is full of coffee. And you're like, no, 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 stop it. You're like, just put it down. They're like, are you sure? You're like, yes, I'm going to wash this coffee cup. Don't do anything. You're going to mess it up.
What's interesting, the difference, too, from Burning Man and Africa Burn is they at Burning Man, no water, liquid, no spitting, anything on the plier. Right? No. And Africa Burn, we have these two wash bins, and we're washing coffee cups because we're aliens coffee. And you know, the bins are getting dirty, and I go up to one of our, you know, day team leaders, and I ask him, his name's Juniper Jim. Yeah, I ask him, what do I do with, you know, the water here? I like the gray water, I guess. And he's like, there's a whole playa out there. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. And he just shrugs. So I found a spot that I didn't think anyone would step in. And I just tossed it. it's a little bit different, yeah. You know.
It's not protected ground.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on and telling your story. Tori, I say to you over and over how grateful I am for you being part of the team. And I think this is an amazing adventure. And I love that you guys went. And thank you for bringing intern Will into our lives. Now go clean my coffee cup.
and look for the project we'll be doing on Burner Podcast with photos from the burn and a blog post. And Tori's actually, I think she said she was going to make a survival guide for Africa Burn for people to access.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I did not say that, but I'll think about it. Yeah.
Well, either way, you're going to have to put out some shit now because now we've said it.
I'll put out some shit and I'm happy to answer any and all questions as they come.
Yeah. Yeah, just email her directly if you have any questions on how to prepare for Africa.
If you guys want to get a hold of them, you know, you can always go to burnerpodcast.com and there's a contact page over there. You can link through there and we will forward the emails to the proper people that you're emailing.
Yeah. All right. Look forward to hearing from everyone.
You guys are awesome. Love you guys.
All right, well, there it is. Come in, take me away from you. There's nothing that 100 men or more could ever do. I love that song. You can connect with me on all the social medias at Mr. Arash. That's M-R-A-R-A-S-H. I'm most active on Facebook and Instagram, but you can tweet me and stuff too. Again, it's M-R-A-R-A-S-H on everything. Follow Burner Podcast on Facebook to stay up to date on all things Burner Podcast. Burner Podcast is released on the first and third Wednesdays of the month and is available on Stitcher, iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn Radio, among many others. The show is not hard to find. We're even on YouTube, actually. This episode was produced by myself and associate producer Tori Massey. Made it happen. With support from our amazing team, which include our network music editor, Navjit Sarna, chief playa scientist, Ringo Martinez. There's a bunch of other names and new people joining the team. If you want to get a hold of anybody on the team, including associate producer Tori, just go to burnerpodcast.com and there's a link there on that says about and contact and stuff. You can click there and send us a message and we'll make sure that she gets it or gets to her. We thank you, dear listeners, for all of your support. The show would not be happening if it was not for you. Our opening theme music is America's Horse with No Name Remix and is produced by DJ Joman. Check out his music over at soundcloud.com/DJ Joman. So until next time, love and light and another crap. Good night.